this statue was placed in an antechamber, supposedly to the throne room, and it may have been a little shrine to indicate the importance of water at Mari, as it is everywhere in Mesopotamia. As you may have guessed, we have many records from the Mari Palace, about 20,000 or so, and these were preserved in archives that were fired in the final destruction. An interesting fact about these Mari archives is that we know Babylonian officials who occupied the palace went through Zimri-Lim's archives, and they arranged them in boxes. They sent most of the letters from Hammurabi to Zimri-Lim back to Hammurabi, so they're lost. We only have a few of those surviving. And Zimri-Lim's correspondence with other rulers in Syria, in northern Mesopotamia, could have provided valuable intelligence to Hammurabi, so they would have been sent back to him as well. The rest of the palace archives were divided up by the Babylonians, and they are labeled. That's how we know that it was Babylonian officials who organized the archives. We have the clay ceilings with their seal stone, and they have Babylonian names, and also the year of Hammurabi's rule. Like Amaduga, the palace housekeeper who refused to switch her allegiance from Yasma-Adad to Zimri-Lim, these workers still called themselves the servants of Zimri-Lim. So they may have been men who worked for Zimri-Lim, but still, but under Hammurabi's rule, carried out his orders. Letters from Zimri-Lim's wife and queen, Shibtu, described the life of the royal family. And I mentioned the diplomatic alliances and marriages that Zimri-Lim's daughters were involved in. These daughters sent letters to their mother and father, and they explained the different paths that were available to a princess. One daughter was a Naditam, which is a woman who entered into the service of the god. And these women, when they appear in texts, are often related to a king, and they would pray and perform rituals on behalf of their family. So the king has special access to a goddess or a god through his daughter. The life of a royal Naditam was quite comfortable, and we read of gifts demanded by Zimri-Lim's daughter from her parents so that she can maintain her status, her way of life, while she's still living in the temple. She sounds very spoiled. She wants a lot of gold. At least three daughters were married to the rulers of cities nearby, and these would cement alliances between these men and Zimri-Lim. One daughter requested troops from her father on her husband's behalf. So that provides some insight into how a royal wife could negotiate on behalf of her husband. Another daughter was captured after her city was attacked, and so that reveals the perils of the royal queen. And a third was very unhappy in her marriage because she felt that her status was not being publicly displayed, that her husband was favoring a woman who was the daughter of another king over her. So she had a lot of complaints. Among the surviving documents from the Mari archives are rations provided for 9 female scribes. And this is a rare piece of evidence for women engaged in this profession. And we'll see that Zimri-Lim seems to promote female professionals. He also had a female physician among his palace staff. Other correspondence between Zimri-Lim and his generals, we've already discussed how they collected troops and conducted themselves in battle. The civil administration had many of the same problems we've already described for Hammurabi. Zimri-Lim had to keep irrigation canals open, and even in the best of times, the territory around Mari couldn't grow enough food to support the population. So Zimri-Lim had the added problem of making sure that there was open access to food supply. This wasn't usually a problem because, remember, Mari is located in such an important position for both land trade and river trade. But we do it does show us that kings had to use all of their resources to feed their people.